Good morning. So last time we introduced caches. And one thing we said with caches is, well, we have this small storage that's supposed to speed up our accesses to a really big memory. You know, how is that actually going to be possible? You know, without our programs needing to be written as if we're using a really, really small memory. And the answer is that we have these kind of things that just programs do by accident. You don't have to write your program to do them, which our caches will take advantage of. And we call this idea locality. We had two types. We had what we call temporal locality, which is that if we access something, we're likely to access that thing again soon. And if we, think about why this happens, I should say, if we have things like loops, like in a loop we do the same thing over and over again, maybe with little variations, so we're accessing some data related to that and some code related to that over and over again. So this kind of just happens naturally in a program. We also had spatial locality, and this also has a good intuition with loops, that when we have things like arrays, we're likely to access, you know, different parts of the array soon. If we access another part of the array, that's a, you know, good heuristic. And our caches are going to take advantage of these heuristics to achieve a very high, what we call hit rate, amount of times that we find a value stored in the cache, you know, even though our programs aren't explicitly written to use the cache, typically. And even though our cache actually typically has a very small amount of storage compared to the total storage of the program. Then we talked about one particular cache design, which is arguably the simplest, sort of cache design that's like supports an arbitrary, you know, amount of data, arguably. In this design, we said we divide our cache and our memory into fixed size blocks. And our cache would have some number of these blocks. And to figure out where a value for memory was stored, we divide up the memory address into three components. We have our offset, which tells us where in the block we are. And this just comes naturally. If we have a block size of 4, we need to know, is this byte the 0th, 1st, 2nd, or 3rd of a block? And that's just the lower bits, because like if we think they're taking mod 4, that's the least significant 2 bits. And we're going to choose our cache block sizes so they're always powers of 2. So that's always the lower bits tell us where in the block we are, which should kind of remind you of what we do with pages, where the lower bits of an address tell us where in a page we are. Same idea with cache blocks, except the blocks are usually a lot smaller than a page. Then if we have multiple blocks in our cache, we're going to choose in a direct map cache one place where that block can be stored. And the index of the block in the cache is going to be what we call the index bits. And we're going to assign that such that the first block of memory can be stored in the first block of the cache, the second block in the second block of the cache, and so on. But a cache is going to be much smaller than our memory. So eventually we have to wrap around. And when we wrap around, we're going to have index all ones. And that's going to be kind of the last block of our cache. We're going to choose our caches to always have a power of 2 number of blocks. So all ones is actually going to be this extent. And then when we add 1 to that, we're going to increment our tag. And the tag is kind of the rest of the address. And we need that because with our cache being much smaller than our memory, there are going to be multiple blocks which could be stored at any particular place. So in our cache, we're going to store a tag with each value and also a valid bit to indicate whether we should have a valid value there. All right. This is all shelter in place. Okay. I am here. Okay, so we looked at some examples of that. So that patch design. Next time, and we're going to extend this patch design to loosen the restriction that each block has exactly one place it can be stored in the cache. And the reason why we're going to want to do that is because of a concept we talked about last time called conflictnesses. That with this direct map cache idea, sometimes two different values just coincidentally have the same index bits. And are being accessed sort of close in proximity in time, and we end up having misses, even though the cache would have capacity if we had a little more flexibility. So we're going to add that extra flexibility to help us avoid conflict misses from kind of unhappy coincidence with indexes, but we're still going to have that idea that that blocks have a limited number of places they could go in the cache, because that makes the cache way more efficient. The big reason a direct map cache didn't say every block can go anywhere in the cache is because that would make the hardware that looks things up a lot less efficient, because it'd have to check a lot of places. Okay, so questions on things we covered last time? Okay, so some logistics notes. There will be a midterm review that Professor Campbell will do. I will be in Pittsburgh. On Thursday. Please have questions. If you don't have questions, we won't talk about things. And the midterm is next Tuesday in lecture. You must come to your enrolled lecture. If you can't do that, you should talk to us. And the topics are up to including last week's lecture. So today's lecture will not be on the midterm. Also, on the lab this week must be completed in person. If you can't do that, you should talk to us again. Okay, so we talked about direct map caches. Let's figure out how this should work. And with an example here. This is the same list of accesses that we showed last time, but our cache is different here. Our cache has 4-byte blocks and 4 sets. So first question is, how do we split up the address, one of these addresses? I'll use the example of 6-1 because it's not all zeros, which makes the answer a little more interesting. How do we split that up into tags and X offset for this cache? Someone, and I have some formulas, though this is not how I recommend thinking about this, because this is not a formula memorization, this is how do caches work. So someone tell me, what's a good first step for figuring out how I split up this address into tag, index, and offset? Yeah?
4-byte blocks
mean 2-bit offset. Okay, so 4-byte blocks implies 2-bit offset, and how do we know it's 2 and not like 1 or 4?
2
to the 2. Okay, so because 4 is 2 to the 2, so we need 2 bits to determine which of the 4 bytes we're in, either the 0, 1, 2, or 3 index. Okay, so we have 2 offset bits. Then I think the next easiest thing to figure out is the number of index bits. One way we can figure that out is we can cheat and realize that I've labeled these helpfully, so we can tell there's 2 index bits. If they weren't so helpfully labeled, I could say we have 4 sets. That's 2 to the 2 sets. We need 2 bits to tell which of those sets. Remember, sets is rows we're in. So we have 2 index bits. And the tag is everything left over. So it appears to be the remaining 4 bits in this example. So that gives us this way of splitting up our accesses. So given that, let's figure out how many hits, which of these accesses are hits. So check with your neighbor, see if you agree on what happens. And let's assume the cache starts as all invalid. So our initial state is that the valid bits are all 0. who would like some more time? So let's say, who thinks we have at least one hint? At least two hints? At least three? At least four? At least five? Okay. So I think three is what we get. Their consensus. So let's go through sort of quickly. So our first access, we're going to look in index 0, and it's invalid, so that's definitely a miss. I'm just going to write M for that. And what we always do when we have a miss is we bring in that value. We can't predict the future, so we're not going to say, look at, you know, whether it's going to be helpful. We're going to assume, because we assume temporal locality exists, that it's going to be helpful to bring in this value. In this case, it turns out to be right. So I bring in the value, which is going to be the whole block. And the block, in this case, is addresses 0 through 3, with tag all zeros. Then, when I access index 1, I look in access address 1, I look in index 0, 0 again. I check if the tag matches. It does, so that's going to be a hit. Then I access 6, 3. I look in index 1. I'll do this in a different color. Index 0, sorry, look in index 0. It's valid, but the tag doesn't match, so this is a miss. And we always bring in the value. We don't look at the future, so we're just going to replace everything here. And we're going to set our tag to 0110, and we're going to bring in the whole block. And the block starts at offset 0. So we're going to bring in memory at 060 through 063. Our value is going to be those values from memory. Why 060? Because that's this tag, the same index, and an offset of 0. That's the beginning of the block. Then we access 6-1 and 6-2, and those are both hits because the tag matches and it's in index 0. Then we access address 0 again, and we have accessed it before, so there was an opportunity for the cache to keep it, but if we check, we look in index 0, and the valid bit matches. The tag does not match, so this is a miss. And we're going to, once again, assume temporal locality and spatial locality and bring in the block containing address 0. Then we access address 64. It has index 1, which is here. So that's going to be a miss because it's invalid. And we're going to insert the value of that cache block, which is going to be memory at 64267, which again I can figure out by writing the address and setting all the minimum offset to the maximum offset. So questions, how I completed this, which is hopefully review of last time? Yes.
So do you think like on like a quiz or the midterm, you guys would ask a question of like fill in the chart on the right, like what are the values at the end, or would it more likely
question, would we be more likely to ask for the chart on the left or the right? I think both are fair game. Or other questions about the scenario, like we expect you to know this process, and we're going to have some more exercises on it. For example, the lab after the exam is intended to be basically practicing this.
And the offsets like don't contribute to the
hits and misses? The offsets don't contribute to the hits and misses? Yes, that is correct. Okay, so something you'll notice here is that because we have this kind of possibly coincidence that that only a few indexes were used, we had a lot of extra misses. We've seen this sort of conflict miss pattern. And a good question might be, like, how big of a problem is this in practice? And to give some examples, I have here some results showing cache misses. And here I have, this is cache misses per instruction in a simulator. A simulator we'll actually use later in the semester called Valgrind, where I'm simulating a 16 kilobyte direct map cache. And in this example, I'm simulating it with a binary search tree. And I load the binary search tree, make it, you know, set it all up, and then I just repeatedly access it over and over again. And I have my miss rate, and on the x-axis, I have the total size of the binary search tree. So before this pink line here, the search tree fits entirely in the cache. If we were clever enough, the whole thing could be stored in the cache. But the problem is, I've kind of malloced the parts of my binary search tree, and we have some coincidences where things map to the same set. So we get conflict misses. So even though everything should stay in the cache and I should have essentially no misses, what happens is, like in our example before, I have things where I've accessed the value before and possibly recently, but it got kicked out by another value which happened to have the same index bits. So we're going to talk about a fix for this. And to give an example of what that looks like, here are the results of the number of cache misses on my actual desktop, which has a 32 kilobyte cache. I have a line indicating when I have 32 kilobytes of data. And you can see the designers of my processor have somehow figured out how to have a much lower cache miss rate by dealing with these sort of random conflicts much better. Where with our direct map cache, we kind of, you know, we had this kind of big background rate of misses from those cases where just by accident some index bits clashed. So it's still not perfect, but it's pretty good. Some questions about what I'm showing with this question? So this is with like a search tree. So this, like, we have a bunch of dynamically allocated stuff because I'm dynamically allocating each of the tree nodes. We can also look at the situation with something that's kind of one big array. So in this case, I'm doing a matrix multiply. My matrix is stored as a contiguous array, row major order. And when the matrices fit in the cache, which is before this line, assuming I load things in advance, I get essentially no misses. But after that, I have this weird chart here, and you might say, oh gosh, you have some problems measuring things here. That's right? That's not a measuring problem. This is a simulation. Like, that is being measured correctly. So something's going on there, and what's going on there is, well, this is 64. This is 48. 64 is a power of 2. Isn't that interesting? And the power of 2 has this spike in misses. So what's going on there? Well, to think about that, we can think about kind of how our cache maps to memory. That because of the way we map blocks of memory to blocks of the cache, we have these values which are spaced apart, you know, the size of the cache, that map to the same cache bolt. And the size of the cache is a power of 2. So if we think about how that corresponds to an array, if our array elements are a power of 2 in size, then there's some x which, where array of 0 and array of x map to the same thing, an array of 1 and array of x plus 1 and so on, and that x is going to be a power of 2. And that's what's happening in my example with this matrix multiply. That when I have a size of 64, when I'm going down a column, I'm accessing 64, 128 because, you know, I have my matrix being stored as 0 through 63, then, 64 to 127, then 64 times 2 to 64 times 3, and so on. So when I go down a column in that, I end up sort of accessing things which are a power of 2 bytes apart. And that happens to match how the indexes in my cache are computed. So these all have roughly the same index bits, or a small set of index bits. And so I get way lower cache efficiency. And this also happens for some other numbers where it's less obvious why it happens for some other numbers. But basically, numbers that are close enough, closely related enough to a power of 2, that when we look at the indices, the index bits don't change enough. So we overuse some indices in our cache. Okay, so questions? Yeah. And I'll show the diagram of, this is what my real processor shows. So in this case, this is real measurement. So these are actually measurement error because it's very short. It's dominated by kind of one-time misses. But you can see that my real cache on my desktop has done something to get rid of these anomalies at powers of 2 for the most part. And to have a roughly same mish rate for my hot values. So what is the main thing my processor is doing, the primary thing it's doing, to like not have these anomalies from indices just happening to like stay the same, like as we do around a column of a matrix where things are spaced apart by a power of 2, or just by accident because of how malloc works, that malloc just happens to allocate 2 nodes of our tree with addresses that look similar. And the answer is that we're going to extend our cache to have more places to put a value per index. And this is going to make those kind of coincidental conflicts less of an issue. Not an issue, but a lot less of an issue. And in this design, I basically have kind of 2 direct map caches stapled together. Some terminology. So we mentioned when we talked about rows of the cache that we call them sets. You now see why we call them sets. So we have the first row of the cache is set 0. I'll say index 0. Second row is set 1. And anything with the index bits 0 will go in set 0. Anything with the index bits 1 will go in set 1. But now we have 2 places we can decide to put it. We're going to call this a two-way cache. And the ways are our columns. And when I need to identify a way, I'll refer them as way 0 or way 1. So let's go through how this works with an access pattern. So here I have our same access pattern. And in this cache, we have 2-byte blocks still, 2-byte blocks. So I have 1 offset bit. I need to tell if I'm byte 0 or byte 1 of the block. I have 1 index bit because I have 2 rows. So that row 0 or row 1, set index 0, 1. And everything else I will use as my tag. And we're starting invalid, so my first access is a miss. And I'm going to insert into the cache the block containing this, which is going to have 0 and 1. Then, since I've done that, my second access is a hit. Because I have my value 1 here. And we can tell that because we go to index 0, check the tag matches, see that therefore we have our value, and it's going to be the second byte, byte 1 of our data. Then I access 63, I'm going to look at index 1. That's of course going to be a miss because both of the things in that index are invalid. So I'm going to add that value to that set, and I'll just arbitrarily choose to put it in way zero. I don't have to do that, but I'll just choose to put it there. And since 6.3 is byte one of the block starts at 6.2, so that's the first byte we're gonna store in that data. It's the one from address 6.2. And we copy our tag, set it as valid. Then we access 6.1, we're gonna look at index zero, and we're gonna say, well, you know, we look at what's valid here. The first set is first way is valid, but the tag doesn't match. The second way is not valid, so we didn't find it. So it's a miss. But now, when we bring in the value, we don't have to overwrite the value we brought in before with the same index because we have an extra space. So we're not gonna do that. We're gonna insert this value in our other way. And this means that if we peek ahead later on, we're gonna have a better time when we reaccess that first block. So I bring in the block containing 6.1, which is gonna be 6.0 and 6.1 with a tag of 0.1.1.0.0.0. Copy the tag over, that's that access. Then I access 6.2, that's gonna go to index one. I'm gonna see what are my valid ways. This first one's valid, I check if the tag matches, it does. So that's gonna be a hit. Then I access 0.0.0, that's index zero. I see that this first way is of that set is valid. Its tag matches, so that's gonna be a hit. I'm not gonna ignore this one because when I check its tag, it doesn't match, so it's not what we're looking for. So that's a hit. Then we access 6.4. And here's where we're gonna have something that's a little tricky to deal with. So when we access address 6.4, this is index one, so I'm gonna look here. So index, sorry, zero. This is zero here. And I'm gonna check for whether that value is already there. So first, I'm gonna check way zero. I'm gonna see it's valid. I'm gonna see the tag doesn't match, so it's not there. I'm gonna check the other one. See it's valid, I'm gonna see the tag doesn't match. So this is a miss. Even though our set's full, it's a miss. But now we need to make a decision. That I need to put the block containing 6.4 and 6.5 somewhere in set zero. And we're gonna have to talk about how to do that because it's not clear, should I replace 0.0 and 0.1 or should I replace 6.0 and 6.1? And if one of them is preferable, how should I track that information? So we'll talk about that a bit later. The first questions on kind of our lookup process and handling this is when we don't have to make this which place do I put it decision. Yeah?
How does this like double table lay out in memory? Like will the two places labeled index 0 and index
2? The question is how is this laid out in memory? So this is not in main memory, this is in a special memory. Typically the hardware layout does kind of look like a table. Usually the metadata is stored actually in a separate area of the chip from the data. And if you learn about how SRAMs work, you'll learn about kind of the physical layout. But usually that there's a separate, what's called a tag store for the valid bits and tag and some other metadata we'll talk about from the data. But it actually is like physically laid out kind of like a table because of how SRAMs work. Basically, there's a way you can excite a line and get all the values for a line of data out. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so with our associative lookup, we kind of have three possibilities. So one possibility is we look at a set, we find out none of the blocks in the set are valid, that's a miss. One of the possibilities is we look in the set, we find there are valid blocks, but none of them match the tap. And the other possibility is that we'll have exactly one valid block that will also match the tag. We're never going to have multiple valid blocks that match the tag because we're not going to store two copies of the same thing. That would be wasteful. So kind of what's going on in our hardware is our hardware is going to use the index bits to extract a row of this cache. And usually in the hardware, we're going to simultaneously check the valid bits and compare the tags. And this means that if we have a two-way cache, the hardware typically will have twice the comparing hardware for checking tags versus a one-way one. And this is a reason why we're not going to go up to like 100 ways, because that is going to require a lot of hardware to simultaneously check all these tags, which is usually not something people do. Not never, but usually not something a hardware designer is willing to do. And I'm mentioning this so, like, the cost of extra ways is not like we're doubling the time. It's like a lot less than that. It's not zero because the machinery to deal with, you know, figuring out which of the two ways matches and getting the data, you know, we're going to have a mux here, you know, that we need to operate. And if that's a mux with, you know, 16 inputs, that's not going to be super fast, but it's not going to be like your manual process where you like iterate through each of the ways. That's not what the hardware's doing. The hardware's doing this in parallel. And that's important for why the performance of these multi-way caches. Okay, so questions about our associative cache operation. So let's get to then this issue here of what do we do about replacing a block? So we need to decide, you know, where do we insert this value? We know that our policy is temporal locality says the best thing to do is insert the block containing 64. It might be the case that that doesn't work out with the future accesses, but the cache has no way of knowing that. We're going to assume that it's the right thing to do is to insert it. And the question is when. So the most common strategy is going to be that we're going to try to take advantage of locality in that. So if I look at my accesses here, I have most recently accessed this value. So that's the most important value to keep in that cache, is the to say is that this one here, right? We just accessed it. That's the most important value to keep. So we don't want to replace that one. We want to replace the other one. And this is based on temporal locality. My assumption is, since I've accessed 00 more recently than 60 or 61, that 00 and 01 is the block that's going to be most useful to have in the cache. So this idea is called least recently used. So we're going to track, to implement this, we're going to track that information. And with a two-way cache, I just need one bit. I need to know which block is the least recently used one. And in this case, the least recently used block here is way one, not way zero. And if we're tracking this, we have to update this least recently used information on pretty much every access, including just reads, where we don't update the cache data. So for example, when we were here, this LRU information would have been 0, not 1, and we had to update it on this access to 0, 0. Also, this kind of only having one bit for this only really works with a two-way cache. If we had three ways, we actually need to know the order, because if I have to add two different things in a row to a set, I need to know the LRU information tells me where to put the first one, but then I need to figure out where do I put the second one. So we actually need to track an ordering of all the blocks if we had three or more ways. Yes? Can you write, when you write to a memory that's in a cache, you have to both the cache and the memory? So I would say the cache is a special memory in the processor. So it supports write operations. And typically the way this will work is that the cache will be implemented, as I alluded to, with a tag store, which will have the valid bits and the tags and the LRU, and a data store. And so if we're keeping the LRU information, this means that every access is in fact going to modify kind of a row of the tag store. And accesses that actually read values from memory will also possibly modify a row of the data store. Does that answer your question? Okay, so the question is something writes to memory, meaning a program writes to memory? Okay, so we haven't talked about the issue of what happens when we write to data that's in the cache from our programs. And we're gonna have to deal with that specially. The short answer is that there are multiple cache designs people actually use for this. The simplest but least efficient is that whenever you write to the cache, you also write to memory right away. Now, a more efficient way would not do that, and we'll talk about how that works later. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Yeah, so for now, we're just dealing with reading from the cache, but because we have this bookkeeping information, and because our cache is keeping copies of stuff in memory, that causes writes internally in the cache that are kind of invisible to the program, except for performance. So we have this LRU idea here. So this is kind of our ideal replacement policy for locality. We were replacing the value that seems to have the least importance based on our intuition about temporal locality. And there's a problem with actually implementing this scheme. So there's kind of actually two problems. So least recently used, kind of our best replacement policy, if we assume locality exists, which is basically what caches are built on. When we have lots of ways, this requires quite a bit of bits. I have like the formula for the number of bits based on, if I have, say, 10 ways, there are 10 factorial orderings of those values, and we need to distinguish all the orderings just in case I have 10 consecutive misses to a set, I need to know what order to replace things in to implement LRU. So that gives us kind of the lower bound on the number of bits we need to use. And, you know, with 10 ways, that gets kind of expensive. But probably more importantly, it gets, like, not just, like, a large amount of storage, it's, like, actually a lot of logic to keep track of an ordering and update it if we have, like, 4 or 8 or 16 ways, which isn't uncommon for like an L3 cache on a modern processor. So very often when we have more than two ways, processors won't implement least recently used, but they'll do an approximation. And why an approximation works is the key idea of temporal locality was that recently used values are likely to still be used. So our approximation is we're going to just avoid recently used values and look for some older value, and we don't really care about the precise ordering as long as we can successfully identify that this value hasn't been used very recently. So these approximations aren't going to track that full, like, exactly when what was used when, but they're going to track enough information to identify things that haven't been used recently. And this is typically what processors you're going to use. You know, desktop and laptop and mobile phone processors will typically use an approximation of least recently used for their caches that are typically going to be associative, you know, typically with four ways up to like 8 or 16, sometimes more. Now, all these least recently used schemes have this issue that we need to update this least recently used information on every read, even if it's a hit. And that's kind of annoying that we're actually updating storage every time we do in-memory access. You know, even though we have this cache that's supposed to make memory accesses really efficient. And so some cache designs find LRU unacceptably expensive for that reason. They don't want to actually do bookkeeping where they update things every time a program just does normal reads of memory. So they might use a scheme which has sort of bookkeeping information that's updated less often. There's kind of two common ones. One is called first in, first out. In the first in, first out scheme, we first replace way 0, then way 1, then way 2, then way 3, and then wrap around to way 0. So we keep a counter per set, but we only update that when we actually load a value into our cache. We don't update it on every read, we just update it every time there's a miss. So that's a lot less bookkeeping, and we have to update the bookkeeping information when there's a miss anyways, because we're updating the tags and the valid bits. So it's not a big extra cost to update this counter. And another strategy, which seems non-intuitive, is pseudo-random, that don't even track any information about what way, you know, was last used in any sort of way. Just make a random choice. And you might say, that seems like that wouldn't work very well, but it turns out it works pretty good. And the intuition for why it works pretty good is that if we make a bad random choice and evict something that is going to be used soon, that means that, well, we're going to use that soon and we're going to bring it back in and we're going to kind of undo that bad random choice kind of automatically. And so that's why the sort of random replacement policy isn't that bad. It's not great, but it's not that bad, and there have been some real processors that have used that for that reason. So questions about replacement policies? Okay, so some terminology. So we talked about direct mapped. And we have these associative caches is what the term will use, these ones where we kind of stapled a bunch of direct map caches together. And we'll say one that has E blocks per set, so E columns. We'll say it's an E-way set associative cache. So you can kind of think of that a direct map cache is a one-way set associative cache. So the design we talked about is just a special case of our general idea of having, you know, E ways, E copies of the block. There's also another special case that sometimes comes up, especially for very small caches, which is a fully associative cache, where everything is in one big set. So in a fully associative cache, we have 0 index bits, because 2^0 equals 1 equals the number of sets, the number of rows. And this is sometimes something, say, for a very small cache where, you know, if we have, say, 32 blocks and it's fully associative, that means our tag will store everything but the offset bits. And whenever we access a value, we'll check all 32 tags. And hardware that implement this will typically have 32 comparators that like check all of those tags in parallel. Okay, so we talked about splitting things up into tag, index, and offset last time. I'll have these formulas because people like these formulas. I don't recommend sort of knowing how to do it by memorizing these formulas. I recommend sort of knowing how this works by thinking about kind of our picture of we have blocks of a certain size, because I think that's more reliable than dealing with the formulas, but I'll have the formulas to like to kind of summarize that information. That we have our cache that's kind of general, you know, and we have a number of sets that we list as capital S here, and two to that or log base two of the number of sets is the number of set index bits. We have a block size and log base two of that is the number of block offset bits or and everything left over in the address is the tag. And we have this notion of cache size, and I believe we mentioned last time, and I'll emphasize it now, that when we talk about a cache size, we mean the size not including valid bits, tag bits, LRU information, all the metadata, not part of the cache size. So if I say I have a 16 kilobyte cache, I mean it can store 16 kilobytes of data, and it's going to be stored with more than 16 kilobytes because we need to actually store tags and valid bits. That's not part of the 16 kilobytes. And these formulas here are the same as what we had for our direct map cache, with two exceptions, or one really exception. And that exception is that our cache size now is multiplied by the number of ways. And we can kind of think of this as a consequence that we built this set associative cache by kind of stapling together a bunch of direct map caches. So we have the same tag index offset split. We just have a bunch of copies of that direct map cache, and we need to like check all of them when we're looking up a value, and we need to use a replacement policy to decide which of them to add to and replace something in when we have a miss. But as far as how the address is split up for the lookup, it's the same as our direct map cache. So questions are... So associative. Okay. Cancel it. Okay. So I guess that is not with pluses. Okay, according to that. So interesting. Interesting. Okay. Well, so, well, Okay, so that's our talk of set associative caches. And I guess I'd like to briefly kind of go back to this exercise here and mention, what do we do with LRU information here? So after this miss here, what's least recently used? It's the thing we haven't used at all. So that's index one. And after this miss here, well, we just use index zero, way zero, I should say, way zero. So it's way one. So reviewing our replacement policy, remember I just want to emphasize, because this is a big point of confusion for students, that we, you know, we update the LRU information on every access. So for example, here, so I have this is a miss, we insert 6.1, and now the least recently used way is way 0, because we just touched way 1 in the first index. Then we insert that. That doesn't change. We just set this where way 1 is still least recently used. When we access 0 here, we mentioned this is going to update our LRU information to mark that way 1 is now the least recently used way, not way 0. And so that's bookkeeping, which is happening as we're doing this access that we initially showed. That's kind of important to know. Okay, so I'll just finish up here. So our next big topic with caches, we're going to talk about two remaining topics with caches. So we talked about how set associative caches work, and that's basically our caches in our real processor. That's what they are. There's a few extra things they do that we're not going to talk about, but that's our caches in our real processor. So a topic we like to talk about then is, if that's how the caches work, how does that influence how my code gets run? So to talk about that, we're going to talk about how cache misses work with, and we'll use C code, how that those correspond to each other. And we're mostly concerned about data caches. We mentioned there's data and instruction caches. Instruction caches kind of work pretty well without you doing anything. Data caches, there's things you as a programmer can do that influence how well the data cache works. Another thing we'll talk about is, as I mentioned, we haven't talked about how writing works with caches. That's going to be a topic we'll talk about after we talk about how sort of reads and C code work with caches. So to start out here, here I have a simple function. What data cache accesses? So remember, our caches have a data cache and an instruction cache. I'm going to use a dollar sign to represent the cache on a diagram that go into typically a unified L2 cache. That's our typical diagram. So the instruction cache is going to deal with reading this move and this IMAL and this RET. The data cache is going to deal with everything but accessing instructions. So what data cache accesses does this code have? Can someone tell me one of them? There are two. One of them is easy. One of them is hard. Yeah. Scale factor. Okay, so that is the easy one, because it's kind of explicitly written in the code. Value is not a data cache access, because it's in RDI, which is a register, which is not part of memory. There's one other data cache access this code does. This one is a lot less obvious. So, person who read the book?
Is it like the stack pointer?
The stack pointer. So, it's not the stack pointer, that's a register, but it's on using the stack pointer, yes. And what uses the stack pointer here? There's no call in this thing, but the return does, yes. So the return, if you remember from CS01, hopefully, this on x86, this is pop the return address plus jump to return address. and this pop operation is going to be another read from memory. So this code does two data cache accesses, one 4-byte read and one 8-byte read. So let's say we have it being used in a loop like this. And we can figure out, if we know these addresses, we can figure out what the behavior of our cache will be. So let's say I have a 32 kilobyte cache with 64 byte blocks, and we'll say it's direct mapped. This is realistic for a modern processor, except for the direct map part, it'd probably be like 8 ways. We can figure out how to divide up these addresses, assuming they're physical addresses, which they aren't really, but we'll ignore that for now. Into tag, index, and offset. So if we have this 32 kilobyte cache that's direct map with 64 byte blocks, how many offset bits do we have? Yeah.
Six.
How did you get six?
Two of six
to get 64. Six bits because of log base 2 of 64. Yeah. 2 to the 6. Okay. How about index bits? Yeah. 15? How did you get 15? So 32 kilobytes is 2 to the 15 bytes. Okay. That's what you got. So that's not quite the number of index bits. It's very related to the number of index bits. It's a good first step. So we have these 2 to the 15 bytes. And in this direct map cache, we're going to have our data, which is going to have a total size of 2 to the 15. But it's going to be 2 to the 15 with 2 to the 6 byte blocks. So we need to find out that 2 to the 6 times something equals 2 to the 15 is a total data size. So we can solve for that something. It's going to be 2 to the 15 minus 6, or 2 to the 9. So we have 2 to the 9 sets. So 2 to the 15, right first number to get. Definitely what we actually want. So that's the total number of bytes, but the bytes are divided up into chunks of blocks. And we want to count for a direct map hash, we just count the blocks. If this were a set associative cache, then we'd have to realize that there were multiple copies of the block, and we'd have to divide by the number of ways. And we'll have, in our lab next week, we will practice this a bunch. So with this, we have 2 to the 9. We have 9 index bits, 9 bits. And if hypothetically we had a two-way cache, this would instead, if two-way, it would instead be 8 bits. If four-way, it would be 7 bits, and so on. There is the same thing they said before. And so, like we did with our sort of splitting up virtual addresses into pieces, we can write out these numbers as binary and figure out what the individual parts of the value are. And I just happen to have chosen values where we have coincidences where they have the same index bits, which is a thing which sometimes does happen for real, but obviously I set this scenario up to do that. Questions? Okay, so let's introduce talking about how do these accesses correspond to, how do our cache accesses correspond to like to the code? And the most common place that this will come up is with arrays. So let's assume, I have some C code here, let's assume only the array is kept in memory, everything else is kept in registers, just to keep things simple. Obviously this won't always happen, but you know, this happens enough. And let's say we have a one set direct map cache with 8-byte blocks. Our array is 4-byte elements, so each block can hold 2 array elements. My question is, how many cache misses do we have, assuming the cache starts empty? Like all invalid. But the one block is invalid. So our cache, in this example, we have no set index bits because there's one block. We have a valid bit, we have a tag, and we have data, which is 8, or I should write this out clearly, 8 bytes. And we have basically 4 accesses to memory here, so we have a maximum of 4 misses. So how many misses do you think there actually are? And note that with 8-byte blocks, you know, that's twice the size of an array element. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we're gonna have exactly 1 miss? Exactly 2 misses? Okay, exactly 3? Exactly 4? More than 4? Okay, so we have most consensus on 2. And 2 makes sense, but I actually didn't give you enough information. So there's an issue here that we need to know how these array elements correspond to our cache blocks. And kind of the way you would naturally think of this working gives us the answer that most of you got of 2. And that's that it looks like this. That the first, that array 0 and array 1 are in one cache block, and therefore the next cache block contains array 2 and array 3. In this case, our single block cache ends up having a miss for 0, a hit for 1, a miss for 2, a hit for 3. But it could also be the case that our compiler was unlucky when it allocated the array and chose an address which had a non-zero offset for array 0. In this case, we'll have 3 misses. Because when we access array 0, we're going to bring in array 0 and the stuff before it. OK, Because remember, our cache block is defined based on the offset bits. We don't get to move it around, even if it would be really nice if we could move it around. And similarly, when we access array 3, we're going to bring array 3 and the stuff after the array, even though that's not relevant to us. Questions on this picture here? How we can possibly get 3 misses if we have kind of an unlucky placement of the array. Also, like, we technically didn't exclude this arrangement. Which is real ugly, where we split up one of the array elements across 2 cache blocks. So this is real bad. We don't want to do this. And in fact, our compiler will generally avoid doing this because it is so bad for performance. Even though, yes, it is functional. This is still only 3 misses, or really 2 misses, but not great. I didn't know it's 3 misses, basically. But our compilers in Malgnu will typically try to align values, meaning that they'll make their addresses be a multiple of something. And that's going to be enough to prevent this situation. But compilers typically won't prevent this situation because in reality, our cache blocks are like 64 bytes or something like that. And if we make everything start at the beginning of a cache block, we often would have to add like 40 bytes of padding. And you'd be pretty disappointed if we added 40 bytes of padding everywhere in your program, because that will really start to add up. But adding the like 1 to 7 bytes of padding isn't really a concern. Then that's what we have to do just to get us into this situation versus this one. Okay, some questions on that? Yeah. Question, if memory is a concern of performance, is it possible to tell the compiler to introduce a bunch of padding? It is. Probably in those sorts of cases, it's more common that you'll try to like plan what things end up in the same cache block, basically. And this is a thing I've seen done, for example, in the Linux kernel codes, that you'll see some structs where the struct is in a very particular order because they want to plan that these values are in one cache block and these values are in one cache block and so on. That's probably how you do that. Does that answer your question? And that would be an example of like something we could do, taking advantage of knowing this is how it's going to be used. And I guess as for can you tell the compiler to like add the extra space, we did see an example of that in the VM Explore lab. We tell you to use align as for a big array, that is telling the compiler, hey, make this a multiple of something, even if that wastes space. And that is how you would do that if you wanted to say it for a specific variable. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so let's finish up by doing this exercise. Same cache, how many misses here? It's between 1 and 4. Again. And let's assume we have the nice layout where array 0 is at the beginning of the cache block. The one you all assumed anyways, even though the other ones are possible. Like some more time? Okay, who thinks, we'll just finish off with this, who thinks we'd have 1 miss? Exactly 1, exactly 2, exactly 3, exactly 4. So we have a mix between 2 and 4. So if you look at this, we've changed the order of our abscisses. So what's going to happen, if this is our layout, when we read array 0, that's going to bring the block that our array 0 is in, which is 0 and 1, because it's not next to 2. Then we access array 2, and remember our policy for our caches is we always assume temporal locality, which means that we're always going to keep only the most recently accessed stuff in a set. And the most recently accessed thing in our set of one block is going to be 2 and 3, not 0 and 1. And that means when we access 1, immediately next, because we couldn't predict the future, it's a miss again. And because we still can't predict the future, we're going to bring in 0 and 1 to the cache, assuming that 1 is going to be accessed sooner than this thing we accessed longer ago of 2 and 3. And that means array of 3 is going to miss. So we'll end up with 4 misses. And so this is an example where, because I wrote this code differently, and I wrote it in a way where I have less spatial locality than my original version, this has a much worse performance with my cache. So my cache really liked it when I had this version where I had the best possible spatial locality. I'm going like to think adjacent things in my array. When I stop doing that, this cache ends up performing less well. And this is kind of a thing as programmers where even though the cache is supposed to be invisible to us, the decisions we make will have a real impact on how well the cache does for us if we kind of make it so the cache can take advantage of our code structure. Yes? Yeah. How do I know if it brings in 1 and 2 or 0 and 1? So once I know how my cache, my blocks of memory are laid out, that tells me what's in a block. And the reason I know that I would know the block starts here is that this is going to be an address with offset bits equal to 0. So if you remember when we looked back here, you know, when I was looking at this one, like accessing 6.1, I brought in 6.0 and 6.1 because I want the start with the address with offset 0 in the block. Does that make sense? So the same thing is happening in this example. It's just that we don't see the addresses explicitly, but you know they have offset bits, and their cache is going to bring in the part addresses with offset bits 0 through, in this case, 7. That answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so that's where we'll finish up today. So next time, as I mentioned, we mentioned is exam review. It's our midterm review. And I don't know if I'm supposed to get out of this room, so that's interesting. And I'll stop the recording.